Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Williams Project podcast. On today's episode, which is both Matthew Horncastle and myself, Blair Chappell, we are going to be discussing short-term accommodation, more specifically how we're adapting to the current high interest rate environment. Hello, everyone. I'm very, very excited to be presenting to you with Blair. So you've got both the OGs here today. Blair's actually at home because he's slack. And I'm in the office being a legend.
Yeah, we'll go with that, eh? We thought we had some viewer feedback, well, listener feedback, I should say, that they want a little bit more episodes around specific things we're doing or we've done, slightly more live or relevant, relating to our properties, our investments, our developments, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And we thought this is a perfect time to discuss what we've just done with the finished development. So to give a quick background story, we finished 27 townhouses in the Christchurch CBD. We thought we'd try a new floor plan that we hadn't done before for just four of the townhouses, and they're now three bedroom, two living, four bathroom, or they could theoretically potentially be four bed, four bath. And we were going to keep these as investment properties, do a room by room rental. They were probably going to rent for about $800 to $1,000 a week total, and this was back when interest rates were about 3%. They're worth about $1 million. We're like, that's going to be a good investment property, rent's going to pay the mortgage, no drama. Fast forward roughly 2 years, because this project we had delayed settlement on, interest rates, as we all know, are sort of 6.5-7%. So all of a sudden, servicing an $800,000 mortgage on only 40-50 grand worth of income, all of a sudden, is pretty crappy. So do you want to talk about what we did, Matthew, and where we're up to date, and sort of how it all works?
Yeah, so I actually think, sorry to head off on a tangent already, but I think I need to give a higher level view of short-term accommodation. So Blair and I have always been really bullish on short-term accommodation. And some people say Airbnb accommodation, but we use the word short-term accommodation because it sort of captures the whole industry. And Williams Corporation Assets, because they're townhouses that are affordable to buy, affordable to live in, affordable to maintain, where you can live, work and play, the products we create matches very well to be used in the Airbnb market / the short-term accommodation market. And so before COVID, we used to have lots of our assets, our personal assets and our personal portfolios on short-term accommodation. And we got great returns. And then through COVID, we sort of had less involvement with the short-term accommodation sector. And now tourism in New Zealand is back with an absolute vengeance. So before COVID, tourism in New Zealand was our largest industry, and now tourism's back at pre-COVID levels. So in theory, I haven't seen the data on this, but in theory, the largest industry right now in New Zealand is tourism. And I can see it because every time you're in a city, there's cruise ships. I live in front of a very famous Christchurch landmark, and there's tour bus after tour bus after tour bus. It's the Kapo Cathedral. Tourists taking pictures of it. And so we need to adapt our business to be aligned with where the money is. So we're obviously still building houses and selling them to first home buyers, building houses and selling them to investors that rent the houses. But we're now thinking, well, how do we make more money for us / make more money for our customers / provide another option for people in the marketplace? And that then comes all the way back to Blair's case study of a development we just finished, some assets that myself and Blair are keeping, and then how we're processing those assets.
Yeah, and I suppose it's also worth noting,
better summary, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously we're not financial advisors, so if you want to do what we say, that's entirely on you, just to keep the legal team happy.
But we've also actually got the legal disclaimer. Yeah, we've got the legal disclaimer in the podcast.
But I thought this case study is going to be so good that everyone's going to want to copy it. But what I was going to say is also, as far as Matthew's example of pre-COVID having things on short-term accommodation, then more so moving it back to long-term rental because of COVID, tourist numbers down. Now in the current environment, we're also faced where there's actually a lot more regulation on short-term accommodation from councils than what there was. So there's properties that we were doing Airbnb on, say, 2-3 years ago that currently now would be a lot
even
harder.
Even longer.
Yeah.
This is like 5 years ago.
Yeah, so there'd be properties now that would be much harder to have on Airbnb, or you'd have to go through a consenting process, which you didn't have a few years ago. And also, because of COVID, we've had a weird period of time in the New Zealand economy where we haven't had mass immigration of permanent arrivals. So as far as that population growth, which I still think we've had some, there's been less upward pressure on the rental market in New Zealand versus traditionally because of that long-term population growth. However, like Matthew said, tourism all of a sudden came back with a huge vengeance. That demand's absolutely skyrocketed. We used to travel, we still travel a lot for work, and would always stay in hotels around Auckland, Wellington, Tauranga, etc. Literally within 3 or 4 months, hotel rates more than doubled, and we thought, why? What's more advantageous, trying to shift our product to suit where there's massive, massive demand growth, or try just sit in the normal lane where we know we've got slightly stagnated population growth at the moment? Long term, don't get me wrong, I think there's going to be huge population growth, housing shortage is going to continue, but in the current climate, there's a huge demand for this sort of short-term stay, and especially where we are in Christchurch, we've got strict earthquake regulations, strict engineering. It's very, very hard to go build a 20-story, 300-room hotel building. Like, it's very hard to bring supply on into this sector, which is a key fundamental to think about, is how hard is it to build more hotel rooms and where your property's based?
Yeah, I completely agree. And so now let's talk about the legislation. So in New Zealand, you essentially, primarily, you have two sets of legislation governing you. So one is, and this is for properties, so one is the Resource Management Act. And the best way to think of the Resource Management Act is, what can I do? And then the next is the Building Act. And the best way to think of the Building Act is, how can I do it? So the Resource Management Act, you essentially need to have zonings that permit, so you have what's called a permitted activity. And then you do a consent to say, can I do this activity within the area where it's permitted? So there's some areas where you absolutely can't do short-term accommodation, some areas where it's a maybe, and some areas where it's a yes.
And so just to make it, sorry to cut you off, sorry to make it even more confusing for the listener, every council in New Zealand has completely different rules for this.
Yeah, agreed. And so firstly, I just want to talk about my ethics on this subject. You shouldn't have to ask council's permission to Airbnb your property. So I just want to point out my opinion on a personal level. I think it's ethically wrong that councils have this much control of what we do with our property. And in the future, once I've achieved my business goals, I'm going to have political goals, and I'm going to make sure I get you your property rights back from these bureaucrats. But that's a different philosophical discussion for another day. So first, you need to do a resource consent for short-term accommodation, and you need to get it approved under the Resource Management Act. Then you need to make sure the asset complies under the Building Act. So the Resource Management Act, that's relatively simple. You do a resource consent, you send it to council, you argue with them for 3 months, and you get it approved. And then the Building Act, the way we interpret the legislation is, when you have a new asset, you're actually probably better to explain this. It's the do no harm exemption, Blair.
Yeah, so the way the Building Act works, and this is, I don't want to get too technical in this podcast, but we're going to have to be fair. Like I said, the Building Act governs how to do something. So how to make sure it's built to structural code, to acoustic code, fire rated code, make sure it doesn't leak, etc., etc. All of these homes you see on Airbnb traditionally are generally, for the sake of my argument, brand new townhouses and apartments, and they're built to a residential standard of the Building Act. The issue is, when you go to short-term accommodation, it theoretically changes the use of the building under the Building Act to short-term accommodation. The problem is, at the moment, the Building Act is still old legislation, and it thinks, picture short-term accommodation like a motel block, where the Act is kind of written like, if you have a motel block for short-term accommodation, that's fine, but you need 10 or 20% of your rooms wheelchair accessible. Now, of course, when we apply that to one townhouse, especially in the current market where most townhouses are not one level, they're 2, 3 stories or apartment buildings, it's not physically possible to make 20% of one house wheelchair accessible. So there's sort of this grey area where the legislation hasn't caught up with current day, essentially free market capitalism. But there is provisions in the Building Act where you can apply to your local council and say, this change of use in the property has required me to get a building consent and do new building works. However, I'm not going to, but the result of me not doing that is not going to put anyone in harm or danger for either my property or neighbours' properties. And that's essentially the exemption that most people are relying on in New Zealand, or the exemption council know exists, so they're not taking enforcement action on individuals.
Yeah, very well said. I was actually just thinking of something quite funny, just to go off on a tangent. When you recommended this subject and you were like, you don't look very excited, it's because I just got my Botox done and I can't show expression.
Can't smile.
So can't, that's why I look blandly. Well, because I've got my two really deep... I've got those two real deep forehead lines I'm trying to get rid of.
Well, it's your commitment to the cause. It's actually one of our clients owns a clinic and he's wanted to show Matthew around the clinic. And of course, if you get shown around the clinic, you have to get a procedure done. So stay tuned. Matthew might come on. Matthew might appear next week with a new nose, maybe a Brazilian butt lift. We never know. Anything for a sale.
I actually got I think it's called like I don't know. I got some procedure done, but I look amazing. My wrinkles are like pretty much gone. I need to get, I'm going to get a hair transplant as well. I'm just not into this widow's peak.
Not into it? It's actually anyway, called a wisdom peak. You've got to work real hard to get one. Anyway, back to Airbnb.
So let's just go back.
So that tangent was.
So now we've got, so let's just say we've got an asset. And if you come and talk to Williams, I've got to put a plug in. If you come and talk to Williams Corporation, we have some of these consented assets available. So you get your asset, preferably a Williams Corporation townhouse. You get your resource consent for short-term accommodation. And then you get your Building Act exemption. And now you've got a legal short-term accommodation asset. And in my experience, let's just make up numbers. So in Blair's example, we've got $1 million asset that was going to rent for $800 to $1,000 a week. So let's just say it rents for just under $1,000 a week. So that's a gross rent return of 5% a year. On short-term accommodation, it pretty much doubles. So it goes from taking in $1,000 a week to $2,000 a week. It's just under double.
It's very property specific, but I think on a crude level, that's a pretty good rule of thumb because when we talk about short-term accommodation, there is a lot more fees to come out of it. Like management fees are higher. They're sort of 15%, not 8%. Airbnb take 15% of the pie as well. You've got stuff like toilet paper, soap, shampoo, tea towels, replacement, all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, as the host, you need to pay for your internet, you need to pay for the power, and then you've got just those extra expenses that you normally wouldn't have for a traditional rental. However, in saying that, with Matthew's exemption of it is double, it's probably double after you've deducted those additional expenses. Like, it's not double and then you've got to take off those expenses.
Wow. Oh, so you're talking double.
Yeah, well,
no, it's not quite.
Oh, I'm looking at 240 now.
Are you looking at the numbers now?
12.88% gross yield. Sorry, and if you take out the extra expenses, you'd be back down to about 10.
That is amazing. Yeah, just say 8 or 9. We'll be more conservative.
Agreed. But the main summary
if you were to
for this
say,
property is if we put the figures in as a long-term rental, it was probably going to cash flow negative roughly $500 a week. And like, haven't put the exact numbers, but roughly $500 a week. Now with it on Airbnb, it's roughly $500 positive a week, just under. So the difference isn't $500,
it's a
the
huge
difference is $1,000, which is like, that more than double to go 500 negative to 500 positive?
Oh, it's, yeah. Both sides of the balance sheet.
So, things to be aware of though, you have to pay for furniture. It's kind of expensive and you can't really put it on your mortgage. So like, for example, for these properties, since it's a bit bigger, it probably was a $20,000 to $25,000 exercise, get them furnished, get them set up. And then it does usually take, say, 4 to 6 weeks to get a bit of traction on the listings. Versus, of course, you get a residential tenancy in from week one, they're paying 100% of the rent. Airbnb's a bit of a snowball for that first 1 to 3 months. And like Matt said, there's quite a few complications around the consenting legalities of making sure you've got a property in the right zone with the right permitted use on the resource consent. And then you ideally need to either be managing yourself and have a bit of nous or have a good management company that you know and trust, as you can't deal with things like, oh, the cleaner's sick today and a guest arrives and the bed's still messy from the last guest. Like, there's a bit more nous you need. You can't just be like, oh, the plumber's coming on Wednesday. It's got to be, you run a hotel, you've got strangers from all over the world checking in, they give you public reviews, and there's Airbnbs and mediation service if you don't meet the level of standard required. So like Matthew said, there is definitely more risk than a normal tenancy, but also I'd argue there's less risk as well. More people come through the property, it gets cleaned more regularly, the yield's higher. So
Yeah,
it's
fair
like
call.
anything in life, there's pros and cons both sides of the coin.
Yeah, I think it is a fantastic way to get a great return in the current market in New Zealand. And I see us when we have finished properties slash investments for us this year, I can see us mostly using that for short-term accommodation. Obviously, there's some where it won't be appropriate, but I can see us doing a lot of short-term accommodation with our personal assets. And I can see this being something quite lucrative for customers.
And I also think it's really ethical business in the sense of the management companies are usually smaller businesses, so are the cleaning companies. You provide an affordable alternative, not just for tourism. A lot of the guests we have from our properties are someone might be living in Auckland, they've got a 3 week work contract in Christchurch. They don't really want to live out of a hotel room where they can't cook and clean for 3 weeks. And for literally the same price or less, they get a bigger Airbnb with cooking facilities, with cleaning facilities. Especially in Christchurch, where our properties are equally well located, if not better in some circumstances, than
Yeah,
hotels.
remember when
Like, it's
the
amazing, especially Christchurch, where we are
yeah,
biased.
remember when the this stuff wrote that negative article about us using our houses for short-term accommodation, and they normally write stump. Oh, I shouldn't say that because then they're just going to write another attack piece at us. But I don't understand people thinking that short-term accommodation's bad, because isn't it great that let's just say one of two things can happen, right? And I'm a capitalist, and I love anyone making money. But let's just say one, Hilton comes in, builds a hotel, has 300 rooms, and makes their X million a year. Isn't it cooler to have 300 Kiwis all owning a townhouse, taking that business, that money, that profitability, that financial security to themselves for themselves? And isn't it cool to have the tourists like more connected with Kiwis using their assets? You might put books and resources and pictures in the property that you're passionate about. Like, I just see this as net positive. I think about this all the time, and I can't see a scenario where this isn't better for our country.
And it's also like it's New Zealanders owning New Zealand property, earning income from it, generally through overseas money, paying tax in New Zealand where the money's kept in New Zealand. And like you said, it's the market's always big enough for everyone. People just seem to think the market's very small. And a good example, I looked up the chart we were talking in December, so end of December, which is the last month the data came out for, because it must take them a month or two to get it. There were 360,000 visitors arrive in New Zealand in 1 month.
360,000 in 1 month. That makes so much sense.
Thousand. I might put that actually on
You
the.
should
It'll be
put
on
that in our
Wallhands topic, I
sales
think.
group chat. I've got to go, Blair, because I've got to go into my 1
So
o'clock,
that's.
and you might need to get into your.
Yeah, I've got to want to
Okay.
just real quickly wrap it up. So that was Airbnb. That's just a short summary of had a property, planned to long-term rent it, gone through the process of Airbnb. It's working really well. Sorry, we're time poor as we've both got 1 o'clock meetings and it's 12:58. If you got value from this podcast, feel free to refer a friend. We'd love to have more listeners. Always open for episode recommendations. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to us. We'll see you next time. Have a great day.
See you guys. Thanks very much.